Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live from Chicago. All right, folks, welcome to the show.
The hardest working man in internet radio is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, thanks a lot. I think something's wrong with my volumes. Loudness is in my ear, Welcome to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio, WTTTY. It is 6 o'clock straight up Central Standard Time in Chicago, Illinois. It's a beautiful day. It's a wonderful day weather-wise. It's great. It's a little cooler near the lake, but that's fine. We'll deal with it. And it's just a great looking, gorgeous day. I'm in my studio. We're near the lake and I'm looking out on the boulevard. It's great when you can do your radio show looking out on the boulevard. You're watching people go by here, there, and they're waving and say, "Hey, George." That's great. That's wonderful. And it is a great thing. And as I've said on yesterday's show, I hope you guys listen to that. Tuned into yesterday evening show, where I was saying that I'm going to try and take my show out on the road. I think it's about time that I do that because I've been on the air almost 2 years and we're going to try something different if possible. If not, then we'll be right here in the studio and giving you the lowdown. Okay, this is Chicago, Illinois, the state of Illinois. And right now, as I'm speaking, man, we've got a massive protest in downtown Chicago. A lot of the younger sisters and brothers, African-Americans, whites, Hispanics, I mean, all over the place, they're protesting. They want $15 an hour. The powers that be saying that if we give you $15 an hour, we're going to lay you off because we can't afford it, which I think the corporations do. But McDonald's is saying that it's not their responsible to pay employees $15 an hour. That is the responsibility. If that should happen, it should be the responsibility of the franchise owners, because each McDonald's, in some cases, in some cities, are owned by franchisers, individual owners. So that they may have a case there. And then there's businesses all over the place saying, "Hey, wow, it goes to $15 an hour. We're going to leave. And because the taxes are already too high in Chicago and Illinois, and the taxes are constantly going up and up and up and up, up. People are so pissed off at the taxes and the tax increases that are constantly and continually to rise in the city of Chicago. It's like these politicians have no mercy on the taxpayer. They want to pay for this. They want to pay for that. What do? They go to the taxpayer, the already strapped taxpayer, the already pissed off taxpayer. And I can see why some people are leaving. But I would say do not leave. Stay here and fight. You know, we just have to vote good people in. I've heard people say, "George, why don't you run?" I'm not, you know, and I thought about it. I thought about running for office maybe a few decades ago, but no way. No way. We just have to stay and fight and try to figure out good people to put in office who are going to represent us and who will not be turncoats and become bought off and paid for and working for the establishment. We just have to do those things and we'll be fine, but it's going to take a lot of work. It's going to take a lot of work. Just like I've just got through mentioning, people are downtown. Majority of them are fast food workers. And you probably heard this because it's, I think it's happening in just about every state in the United States, in America, that people are protesting $15 an hour. I don't see why they are not protesting at least for $15 or $16, $17 an hour. Because once they get $15 an hour, they're going to actually need $20 an hour. So, because if you're protesting for $20 an hour, you just might get $15 an hour. But anyway, they're pissed off. And there's other groups that are joining in on this fight. And that's the Chicago Teachers Union. And a lot of other people are, I'm pretty sure, firefighters, police officers. Basically, it's a lot of people who are going against this governor. I mean, we have an asshole governor in the city of Chicago. If you listened to my show yesterday, you would know all about him, all about what an asshole he is, how he's done nothing positive for the state. He's done a lot wrong. He's done a lot that's killing this state. But he has done nothing whatsoever, not one iota of something that's going to be constructive, anything constructive for the state. He has not done anything that's constructive. Actually, he tears down. This is not only me talking. This is the Chicago Sun-Times. This is the Chicago Tribune, two of the most elitist papers in the city of Chicago. Also the Chicago Defender, I mean, Crane, Business News. I mean, just about every publication in the city of Chicago is dissing this guy as he diss this state. You know, we've got universities, we've got schools, colleges, high schools, all of these institutions are in deep, deep trouble because he's cutting. He's taking money away from these schools, colleges, and universities and giving the money to those who are more privileged than those who are in the city. The money. He's Robin Hood in reverse. He's taking from the poor and giving to the rich. I really don't want to spend too much time on Bruce Rauner, the governor of Illinois, because I've spent quite too much time already, especially on yesterday's show about this guy. But the one reason why I keep harping on Bruce Rauner is because I live in the state of Illinois, and we still have not gotten a budget. I understand that other radio shows, other talk show hosts, they are into talking about a lot of other things. But to me, the only thing that matters is trying to keep this guy from literally crushing this state. It's something that he wants to do. And this is something that he had always planned to do, even before he taken office. He was planning to destroy Illinois, and he's making good on that. He's making very good on that, but we the people, we have to stand up. He doesn't care how much he's disliked. He doesn't care how much you despise him. He don't care. He doesn't care how many assholes you call him. It's his way or the highway. Every time he gets his ass up on television, this guy looks like he's just foaming at the mouth. He is so mean. He's mean. I'm trying to struggle to say it or to find a word. The word is mean, vindictive, and hateful. This is what I see every time I see him speak. because basically he can speak for 30 or 40 minutes. But if you summarize what he's talking about, basically what he's saying, it's my way or the highway. He's saying, give me this before I will do that in terms of the budget. I'm going to move right along because I really don't want to be talking about Bruce Rauner that much, but I do understand that the state of Illinois and the people of Illinois, I mean, there is a possibility, folks, where there's about 60 to 70,000 state workers in the state of Illinois, and it's a possibility that these people will not be getting paid in the near future if we do not. Because a budget means that not having a budget means there is no money to be spent without a budget in the state of Illinois and probably in any other state around the country. So we're going to be fighting for that. And so happens, folks, if you're listening and if you're listening in the state of Illinois, so happens, you may know this already, there is no recall on the Illinois Constitution to get to throw this guy out of office. The best thing we can do is probably investigate and find out how corrupt he is and then throw his ass out. Maybe we can have the legislature impeach him. Or maybe we can find a way to get a recall on the ballot. He's got to go, folks. He's got to go. All right, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. on a George Wilder Jr. show. My guest today is Chris Jones. He should be interesting. That should be an interesting conversation. Okay, let's go to another segment of the show. Okay, we're talking about, I'm seeing something on my screen here. It's saying that Microsoft sues the United States government over data request. I don't blame Microsoft. What this is talking about is, if you haven't heard it, it is saying that Microsoft has sued the United States government for the right to tell its customers when a federal agency is looking at their emails. The latest series in a clashes over privacy between the technology industry and Washington. Okay, the last time I heard about something like this, that was a fight with Apple. But now it's with Microsoft. The federal government wants to look at our emails. And they want Microsoft to let them look at our emails. And Microsoft is saying, hell no. These are our customers. You are not going to look at their emails. This is a violation of privacy. I don't know what the federal government thinks that it can just go and get at randomly get information. They can look at my emails. I don't blame Microsoft, and I hope Microsoft seems like they're going to stick to their values and their beliefs. But I hope that they win this suit because I'm sick of the federal government snooping, want to snoop on everybody. And this is the Obama administration, folks. I understand that they're trying to root out terrorism and stuff like this and investigate terrorism, so they're going to probably need that information. But I hope that Microsoft stick to their guns on this one, you know. And, you know, this is privacy. But in retrospect, I really don't care if the government looks at my emails. My emails, because there's nothing. I mean, there's nothing there. The only thing that's in my emails that I know of that I'm pretty sure, because I check my emails every day. I have about three of them. I check them every day and all the time. And most of the time it's just social media people, social media friends, or the guests that I book for the show. That's about it. Or just I may send an email here or there, but that's it. That's my email. But I can't speak for other people's emails. But I'm hoping that they stick to their guns and not give in like Apple. But eventually, just like Apple, the federal the federal government is going to find a way to get in and snoop on you, yours, and my email without the help of Microsoft, without the help of Apple, because they want to get into the iPhones, and Apple staunchly refused. But then I hear that the federal government, now they don't really need Apple to get into the phones. They can get into the phones using someone else. But that's not good. Okay, it says here that the lawsuit filed on Thursday in federal court in Seattle argues that the government is violating, they always violating something, the U.S. Constitution by preventing Microsoft from notifying thousands of customers about government requests for their emails and other documents. Soon, we're not going to have any kind of privacy. None whatsoever. All right, welcome to the George Walter Jr. Show. We're waiting for Chris Jones. I'm pretty sure he will be a great guest. All right, do you like being alone? That's something else in the title here that's going to be discussed on the show. Do you like being alone? You know what? If that question was directed at me, I would probably say, no, I do not like being alone. I never like being alone. But have I been alone? Of course. I think we all have been very alone at certain times. And then there are some people who are alone all the time. You know, I think there is more women living alone than there are men living alone. And I'm not equating single women parents. I'm just saying single women, period, alone by themselves. I mean, I live near, I'm on the north side here. I live close by on Sheridan, and there's nothing but condominiums. And the majority of people in those condominiums are young women. I mean, they work every day. Young women living alone. Okay? And so some of them are, some of those women, not all, are comfortable being alone. They're comfortable with their own company. They've been alone for so long, I mean, they've grown comfortable with themselves, and there's nothing wrong with that. Then you've got those people who are alone who do not want to be alone, but they are alone anyway, so something might be amiss there. All right, 347-857-1762, if you want to chime in on that, you know, call in. If you don't, sit back and listen. We're going to have a guest on the show, Chris Jones, and hopefully he can teach us something about, you know, whatever he's doing. I believe he's a life coach. Yeah, he's a – okay, all right. I'm reading his bio here. Sounds pretty good. And we will discuss some of this the minute he comes on the air. All right, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. on the George Wilder Jr. Show. I want to thank everybody for all your positive responses and feedback. I want to tell you right now that today on Amazon, I've gotten three or four reviews for about three or four individual works. And I want to thank the person who gave me those positive five-star reviews on Amazon for my particular, those particular works. And if you want to see those five-star review folks, just go on Amazon.com, put up there in the text bar, George Wilder Jr. And, you know, you can see those great reviews that I've received from so many wonderful people. And thank you for reading the books, and thank you for your response for the books and short stories. And I'm always working on more. And because I love what I'm doing. And also, I believe Chris Jones is a writer. So we're going to talk to him a little bit more, a little bit about writing. All right. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. I will be right back, folks. Here we go. Stay with me. Hey, folks, I want to let you know that the White Sox are winning. Chicago White Sox are winning. The Cubs are winning. The Bulls are winning, too, but they're not in the playoffs. I just think the Bulls made a colossal mistake getting rid of Tom Thibodeau. You know, and because Tom Thibodeau, he wasn't the greatest coach in the world, okay? But at least he had taken the Bulls three times to the playoffs. They got this new guy, Fred Hoiberg, and the Bulls do not make the playoffs. And what about Kobe Bryant? 60 points in his basketball finale. 60 points. This guy is going out a king. Even Michael Jordan called him to congratulate him. I congratulate him, you know. 60 points in his last game. Wow. That's the way you go out, man. If you're going to go out a winner, no matter what you're doing. Go out a winner. People remember winners. People love winners, you know. Nobody likes a loser. So always win. Whatever you do, you win it. Be like Kobe Bryant. The guy is a winner. All right, let's move right along. Oh, wow, I'm getting tongue-tied for some reason. We're going to move right along. I'm going to talk a little bit more about diabetes because, like I said before, it is one of those diseases that kills a lot of people every year. And it seems to we have to expound on that. All right, you're listening to George Wilder Jr. on the George Wilder Jr. Show, 347-857-1762. We're going to play a little bit of this diabetes clip. All right, stay with me.
I have the best job in the world. I'm a doctor. No, believe me, that's not why. I'm an obesity doctor. I have the honor of working with a group of people subject to the last widely accepted prejudice, being fat. These people have suffered a lot by the time they see me. Shame, guilt, blame, and outright discrimination. The attitude that many take, including those in healthcare, is that these people are to blame for their situation. If they could just control themselves, they wouldn't be overweight, and they're not motivated to change. Please let me tell you, this is not the case. The blame, if we've got to extend some here, has been with our advice, and it's time we change that. Obesity is a disease. It's not something created by lack of character. It's a hormonal disease, and there are many hormones involved, and one of the main ones is a hormone called insulin. Most obese individuals are resistant to this hormone, insulin. So what does that mean exactly, to be resistant to insulin? Well, insulin resistance is essentially a state of type 2 diabetes. Insulin's job is to drive glucose or blood sugar into the cells where it can be used. In a nutshell, when someone is insulin resistant, they are having trouble getting blood sugar where it needs to go into those cells. And it just can't hang out in the blood after we eat, or we would all have a diabetic crisis after every meal. So when someone is resistant to insulin, the body's response to this is to just make more of it. And insulin levels will rise and rise, and for a while, years even, this is going to keep up and blood sugar levels can remain normal. However, usually it can't keep up forever, and even at those elevated levels of insulin are not enough to keep blood sugar in the normal range. So it starts to rise. That's diabetes. It probably won't surprise you to hear that most of my patients have insulin resistance or diabetes. And if you're sitting there thinking, that's not me, you actually might want to think again, because almost 50% of adult Americans now have diabetes or prediabetes. That is almost 120 million of us. But that's hardly everyone who has issues with insulin. Because as I was saying, people have elevated insulin levels due to insulin resistance for years, even decades before the diagnosis of even pre-diabetes is made. Plus, it's been shown that 16 to 25% of normal weight adults are also insulin resistant. So in case you're keeping track, this is a heck of a lot of us. So the trouble with insulin resistance is if it goes up, we are at great risk for developing type 2 diabetes. But also, insulin makes us hungry, and the food we eat much more likely to be stored as fat. Insulin is our fat storage hormone. So we can start to see how it's going to be a problem for diseases like obesity and metabolic issues like diabetes. But what if we trace this problem back to the beginning and we just didn't have so much glucose around that insulin needed to deal with? Let's take a look at how that could be. Everything you eat is either a carbohydrate, a protein, or a fat, and they all have a very different effect on glucose and therefore insulin levels, as you can see on the graph. So when we eat carbohydrates, our insulin and glucose are going to spike up fast. And with proteins, it looks a lot better. But take a look at what happens when we eat fat. Essentially nothing. A flat line. And this is going to wind up being very important. So now I want to translate that graph for you into a real-world situation. I want you to go back and think about the last time you ate an American version of Chinese food. We all know there's rules associated with this, right? And the first rule is you're going to overeat, because the stop signal doesn't get sent until you are literally busting at the seams. Rule number two is, in an hour, you're starving. Why? Well, because the rice in that meal caused glucose and insulin to skyrocket, which triggered hunger, fat storage, and cravings. So, if you're insulin resistant to begin with, and your insulin levels are already higher, you really are hungrier all the time. And we have this set up. Eat carbs, your glucose goes up, your insulin goes up, and you have hunger and fat storage. So how do we recommend to these people to eat? Because it seems like that was
the hardest working man in internet radio.
Is my father, George Wilder Jr., and here he is.
All right, we're having volume problems here, folks, so bear with me. I want to say this, that the last debate for the Democratic nominees or candidates, I'm sorry, candidates. No one's been nominated yet, okay? Candidates, and this is one between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, and this is for the New York delegates, okay? And now they're saying that Hillary Clinton has a 17-point lead over Bernie Sanders, but for some reason, I'm thinking that Bernie Sanders is going to get this because he's revving up the crowd to New York City. My understanding is that Bernie was born in Brooklyn, and Hillary is just – New York is like her adopted state because she was senator of New York, but she was not born in New York. Bernie was, from my understanding. But it's just – Bernie is on fire, but everybody is predicting that Clinton will win this delegate thing in New York on the 19th, April 19th. And my thinking is that Bernie is going to pull this out. For some reason, I'm just, if you're watching the guy and you see the crowds, the massive crowds, his massive supporters, I'm thinking he's going to upset Clinton. And I think Hillary Clinton believes that Bernie Sanders could do this also. But we're just going to have to wait and see, folks. It's going to be totally interesting. And I'm going to be right there. But I do know the debate tonight should be a bunch of fireworks, because they're going to go after each other like they have not gone after each other in the past. So there's going to be a lot of things said. I'm going to try and catch debate. If I don't catch it, I'll catch, you know, bits and pieces of it after the All right. Well, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Okay, inside CBS, they're saying that something is wrong with the Stephen Colbert show. Okay, let's see what they're saying here. Okay, Stephen Colbert's name is on the title of his program, so it's no surprise he has a lot to do with every aspect of CBS Late Night with Stephen Colbert. At times, however, his involvement in the show's minuet has become a problem. Whoa. One that the host himself has lampooned on the show. So is the Tonight Show in trouble? Maybe they should go back and get David Letterman, huh? When the late night program started last September, Colbert was not only the show runner, he even did the voiceovers during the show's intro. One sketch that aired early. Okay, what are they talking about here? Is the show in trouble? Are they going to be getting rid of him? Or the ratings are down? As producer tried to engage the host, he nibbled on snacks and talked to the studio audience. Well, that's Colbert. He's not David Letterman. He's not Jay Leno. He's Stephen Colbert. So he can't be any of those other people. Just like I tell people, I'm a writer. I cannot be Robert Ludlum. I cannot be Vince Flynn or Edgar Allan Poe or some of the other great writers in and around America, living and dead. I have to be me. I have to be George Wilder Jr. You know, I've have to be me. And I've heard some people say, "Well, George, we don't read your kind of stuff." Well, that's great, because I may not read your kind. What genre are you writing in? I may not read that. That's okay. You know, I mean, that's fine. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Let's go to the phone, folks. Hi, you're on the George Wilder Jr. Show. You're on the show. You're on the air. Okay, phone call was dropped. We're going to take a break right here, folks. We should be right back. Let's see if we can find a this will work right here.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. Welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I don't know if you've heard Michael Moore as he kind of disses President Obama on his time in office, you know, on his time in office. And I kind of agree with him on that. So I borrowed this clip here, and I want you guys to listen to it. It's about 6 minutes long, and you make your own. I mean, you make your own thoughts on this. Here he is, Michael Moore.
Michael Moore talking about his 25th anniversary for Roger and Me. He's at Toronto Film Festival. Talk about that, and he was having a conversation with Hollywood Reporter. And they asked him about President Obama. And, oh boy, he let him have it. Let's watch.
I think Obama sadly, has been, you know, he's done many, many good things, but he's also been a huge disappointment. And I really feel like I wish somebody would say to him, maybe I'll say it in case he's watching. You do read The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. President, don't you? When the history is written of this era, this is how you'll be remembered. He was the first black president. Okay, not a bad accomplishment, but that's it. That's it, Mr. Obama. 100 years from now, he was the first black American that got elected president. And that's it. 8 years of your life, and that's what people are going to remember. Boy, I got a feeling, knowing you, that you'd probably wish you were remembered for a few other things, a few other things you could have done.
Well, I agree and disagree. He both goes too far and doesn't go far enough. So let me explain. First of all, I agree that President Obama's accomplishments have been sparse. Let's put it that way, right? So it's not that he did nothing. He did Obamacare. He had a couple of good laws. You have to go all the way back to Lilly Ledbetter, which is the first law that was passed during the Obama administration about fair wages for women. That was back when he had, like, he thought he had this much of a mandate. He's like, ooh, let me try to make sure women get paid the same as men do. Wow. And he got that passed. Good, good. Okay. And he gets a couple of Supreme Court justices, some good laws to protect consumers on credit card issues, although on the banks he's been horrible. Horrible, right? And you know, to protect college kids paying tuition, there was one good law passed there that saved us and them billions of dollars. So it's not fair to say nothing. But the central promise of President Obama was, and he literally said this in one of his campaign ads back in 2008, he said, I'm not going to play the same old Washington game a little better. I'm going to change the way the game is played. Now, he did no such thing. Never even made an effort, not 1% effort. Didn't try to change the game. The lobbyists still run the place. The donors are in massive control, and even more control than when President Obama took place. He has done the bidding of his own donors, whether it was bailing out the banks, who were his number one set of donors back in 2008, to the military-industrial complex, to the oil companies, and the list goes on and on of the people he has catered to, right? In his mind, President Obama has played the same old Washington game a little better. Now, I would argue, and probably Michael Moore would agree, that he's actually played it a little worse. So, two recent examples, but I could literally give you dozens of these, and I have throughout the years on the Young Turks. One is recently on immigration. Oh, Latinos, thanks for voting for me. 71% of your vote came to me. That's why I'm president. I told you I was going to do reform. Psych, just kidding. We're going to midterm elections, and I'm scared of the Republicans. I don't want more Republicans showing up to vote, so I'm not going to give them a reason by making sure I do not do immigration reform before the elections, because I'm so scared of the Republicans. Well, you're not playing the game a little better. You're playing it worse. That you're caving into them. You think you're going to get more votes by trying to appease Republicans? It's been 5-6 years now. When are you going to get it through your skull? They will not be appeased. And now, of course, oh, no, Republicans, don't worry. I'm just as tough as Bush and Cheney was. I'm just as stupid as they are. I'm going to go bomb all over the Middle East. I'm going to go declare war on ISIS, and I'm going to get us involved in a war in Iraq and Syria. I'm going to do what Bush couldn't do, start more wars than him. Great. The one thing that you were doing well was, hey, at least we got out of Iraq, and we were eventually going to get out of Afghanistan. Now that's wiped away, too. So incredibly frustrated. I don't know if he'll be only remembered for being the first African-American president, but I do know that he is absolutely coasting. And he does not care, because here's the thing we always misunderstand. We always think, like, that Iraq war was a disaster. It was a failure. No, it wasn't. It was declared by, in essence, Dick Cheney, right, who was, by all accounts, running the country from 2000 to 2006. Bush, for better or for worse, took charge in the last 2 years, right? And actually, it was, believe it or not, slightly better than the Cheney years, okay? Now, and Cheney, who used to work for Halliburton, got a $34 million exit bonus for them, started a war where Halliburton's stock price went up fivefold during the war. Mission accomplished. So you think Obama, well, he's not doing anything progressive, and he seems like he's given up. He's not doing immigration reform. What has he proposed, let alone done in the second term? Nothing. Nothing. Okay? All the accomplishments I talked about were from the first term. So, as such as they are. So you think, well, okay, that seems to be a failure. No, you're misreading who is making these decisions. It's President Obama. For him, what are you talking about? Massive success. I won the presidency twice. I'm awesome. I did Obamacare. They put my name on it. The Republicans did. Thank you very much. And I'll always be known for expanding health care along the lines of Social Security, Medicare, and then there's Obamacare, and that's a historic accomplishment. Good night. I'll see you later. I'm done. He doesn't really want to be the vacation stuff is right. He didn't take nearly as many vacations as Bush, but he loves him some vacations and the golfing, et cetera. Labor Day, he's out there. Where can I golf? Where can I golf? Oh, my God. Okay. But who cares? I'd let him golf all day and all night if he actually got something done, if he actually fought for his principles. What principles? There's only one principle for President Obama. That's President Obama, my great ego. Now, Michael Moore is smart. What he's trying to do there is appeal to his ego and say, what are you going to be remembered for? Because the one thing these presidents care about more than anything else, other than winning the actual election, is what is going to be my image later? What's going to be my legacy? How much are people going to think I'm great, right? So now Moore is saying, well, they're not going to think you're great at all. They're going to think you did nothing. And he's certainly in the second term very largely right about that.
Yeah, I totally agree. I don't think Obama lived up to many of our expectations. I mean, there are some people in high and influential places that are criticizing Obama. I mean, you've got more African-American elitists criticizing Obama, and I totally agree. I don't think Obama did anything. I think, he came into office. I mean, I voted for him twice. I mean, I had so much hope for Obama. I mean, we all did. People have gotten up out of their hospital beds, out of their wheelchairs to make it to the polls to vote for this guy. I understand that he is still popular in the black community, even though he hasn't done much, if anything, for the black community. Barney, I mean, just like the guy just got through talking about, Obama likes to play golf. He likes parties. He likes to be festive. He likes to dance. He likes to have singers all at the White House. That's cool. That's okay. But you had a responsibility. I remember in his first term, I talked about this in previous shows. Basically, to me, all he did was run after Republicans time and time and time and time again. The Republicans kept spitting in his face, knocking him down, slapping him. He'd get back up time after time, follow them. He was the kid in the schoolyard, and the Republicans were the bullies. They would go over there and beat his ass and knock him down, bloody his lip, and then Obama would get back up and say, hey, wow, would you work with me? And they slap him down. He's right. Obama got to realize Republicans aren't going to see anything his way. So stop going after them. He's right. Obama is or was afraid of the Republicans. At one time, he was so afraid of being impeached. The Republicans that threatened to impeach him, he went back on a lot of the things that he believed in because he didn't want to be impeached. And the Republicans, they were just bluffing. And Obama called their bluff. He was scared. I've said so many times that all Obama did in the White House was hide under the bed from the Republicans because they were after him. I have even heard Obama say, I've bent over, this is him, I'm quoting Obama. He said, I've bent over backwards for the Republicans and they still slap me and kick me. I've bent over backwards. A lot of us were saying that was the wrong, those were the wrong words to use, bent over backwards, because that actually he got fucked by the Republicans. And okay, yeah, I agree. Obama has done some good things, but in his second term, he hasn't done anything. He's going to go down in history as the first black president. Yeah, and you know what? Or the first mixed race president. I don't really call him a black president. I call him a mixed race president. Okay. 347-857-1762. I call him a mixed race president. You might not agree with me, but there's no doubt about it that his mother is white and his father is black. So I would think that's a mixed race president. I would want to say he's black, but I don't know. Don't get me wrong, folks. He's done some great things, and he's still popular in black and white communities, even in the Hispanic community, and he hasn't done anything for them. There's been no immigration reform, none, even though he promised it. Afghanistan, there's a war still in Afghanistan. Obama has bombed at least 7 countries in the Middle East. It is including Syria. Bombed 7 countries. Some people call that war with 7 countries. If he's done that, then he outdid Bush or outdid any other president in bombing countries. Oh, well, I'm going after the terrorist. So much for him being a peace president, right? And let me say this again. I'm not bashing him. I'm just disappointed. And I have a feeling once Obama is officially out of the White House and he's just a citizen like the rest of us, I have a feeling that a lot of people who work with him, by his side, who work very close with him, they're going to come out with bombshell accusations about him, how such a failure he was. In some things he did great, some things he just failed in. There's no doubt about he was afraid of the Republicans. Maybe he's still afraid of them. That's no doubt about that. That's ironclad. Even some of the Republicans have named, to name one Republican, John McCain was on one of the Sunday shows, and he straight up called Obama a coward. And I remember in his first term, we all stood back and used to say, wow, the Republicans got his number. They know all about Obama. That's why they treat him the way they do, because they know he has a soft heart, a caring heart, and he has a sort of a little of a he doesn't have a spine. They know this, and they played on that. They were the bullies picking on a boy in the playground, which that boy happened to have been Obama. And yeah, it is true. Obama is thinking about one thing now. He's in his seventh year in office. This is his second term, okay? And he's thinking about one thing, basically, because he hasn't done anything, period. He's done a lot of talk. Obama has always been a lot of talk. He'll talk about a problem, but that's about it. Then he'll move on to another problem. Talk about that. But Obama is thinking about one thing, his legacy. How are we going to remember him once he leaves office? What is going to be written about him once he leaves office? What can he do to probably get a holiday like Martin Luther King? This is what Obama's thinking about. But Obama is nothing but talk. He talks a good game. He sounds good. I'm pretty sure once he's out of the office of president, he's going to be able to get a job anywhere. Probably come back to Chicago and teach law again, and teach law, if I can say it. But he has been, folks, you may disagree with me, but this is my own feelings and this is the feelings of other people. He's been disappointed. He reminds me of something of Bruce Rauner in Illinois. Bruce Rauner, if I can divert, Bruce Rauner is a total failure. Bruce Rauner has done nothing constructive in the city of Illinois, and he's a Republican. He's done nothing constructive. Everything he's done has been destructive. Instead of building, he's tearing down. And that's a shame. It's a shame. It's not funny, folks. It's a shame. It's just that this guy is just, I don't know where he came from. We was trying to say, where did this guy come from? He acts, you know what? Some of us are saying that some of us is saying that this guy has a mental problem. It could be because the teachers union president called him a sociopath. There is something there, folks. It's got to be. He's mean, vindictive, and nasty. And totally nasty. I mean, if you've seen him, if you heard him demand and talk, and I'm not going to do nothing. That's not going to happen. It ain't going to happen. No, I'm not doing that. I'm going to stay and fight. He's very, very nasty. And he looks mean when he's saying those things. I'm not going to do that. It's not going to happen. It ain't going to happen. No, it's not going to happen. I'm not going to do that. I'm not. That's what he says about funding and getting a budget for the state of Illinois, what he's not going to do. So, folks of Illinois, we have to find a way of getting this guy out. He's the worst thing that ever hit Illinois. He's the worst thing that ever happened to Illinois. And we all know it. And I'm not the only one saying that. There's other Republican politicians are saying the same thing about him. There's even Republicans in the General Assembly, the legislature, who are thinking about turncoating on this guy and just overriding him on just about everything he tries to do and get a budget for the state of Illinois. This is crazy. Okay, we can talk about Mike Madigan. We can talk about John Cullerton. But at least they are coming up with spending plans, spending bills, and putting them on his desk. Actually, before they even get on his desk, he's saying he's going to veto everything. Colleges and community colleges and universities, folks, are closing their doors, laying off people. Students don't know if they're going to be able to get an education. High schools are hurting. Grammar schools are hurting. He's taking money from these schools. He's taking the money from schools that do not have any money. I'm going to bust this guy's jaws. I'm going to bust his balls every day on this show until something positive happens. We cannot just sit around and do nothing. We have to have a plan of action on getting this guy out of the state of Illinois because he's bad for Illinois. Two of the biggest papers in Illinois in this state is saying the same thing, the Chicago Sun-Times, the Chicago Tribune. I'm pretty sure there's other papers that are saying the same thing. This guy has made it a lot worse. Yeah, we were in trouble. Yeah, Illinois was financially in trouble, but he was supposed to come in and make it better. He made this worse. He made it worse. If it was up to Bruce Rauner, every single funding program in the state of Illinois would have stopped. Nothing whatsoever would be funded if it wasn't, if he had way. But the only reason why some people are getting funding for the little programs that are still above water is because of the courts, the federal courts, folks. Since these programs, these agencies have to keep running, so they must be funded. If it was up to Bruce Rauner, these agencies would be closing their doors. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio 347-857-1762. So it looks like, folks, that Chris Jones is not going to show up, so we're just going to kind of not talk about it anymore. I mean, you never know when people don't show up. I mean, they say they're going to show up. They contact me, say they're going to show up. Then they don't show up. Then we just have to say, you know, cross them off the books. All right. We were talking about Stephen Colbert. and the Tonight Show, the guy who took over from David Letterman, they say the show, the Tonight Show, is in trouble. That would be one for the record books. Okay, CBS has decided Colbert needs more help. Ratings for the show still trailed NBC's Tonight Show starring Jimmy Fallon. I'm not a Jimmy Fallon fan, but his show is totally popular. His show is totally watched by millions. Okay, in some weeks, ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live trumps Colbert's efforts. Wow. Though Colbert has won more viewers season to date. So CBS is betting on an unorthodox maneuver, taking the executive Chris Lynch, who gave the network a boost in TV's competitive morning news arena, and setting him out to help steady Colbert's late night ship as showrunner. Wow, folks, that is something. Stephen Colbert is trailing in ratings. This is the guy who took over from, David Letterman. And a lot of people felt that David Letterman and Jay Letterman retired too soon. And I thought that Jay Letterman owned his own show. I heard that somewhere back. But anyway, Stephen Colbert is in trouble. Whenever the ratings are not right, especially on network television, broadcast television, I mean, you're going to soon be out of a job if you don't do something. Wow. This guy is something else. I mean, I think you got to give him a little time, and he just have to find his own audience. Just like me, I'm on my show. I just got to find and build an audience. He just has to find and build an audience, okay? But maybe he won't have time. Maybe they're going to fire him. Who knows? But anyway, have you heard about David Letterman? I'm hearing that he cut all his hair off, and he's got a long black beard. A long white beard. Gray, He's got a long gray beard, and he cut all his hair off. Wow, isn't it wonderful to be in retirement? You can look the way you want to look. You don't have to dress up every day, take a shower, put on clean clothes. You just walk around the house stinking because it's your house and you're rich and you can do that. God bless David Letterman. They probably want him back right now. I'm pretty sure. I can say this. The Jay Leno show and the David Letterman shows, I think they were some of the highest rating shows in the history of television, late night shows in the history of television. And they are missed. I mean, I missed Jay Leno. I thought he was the greatest comedian. He was funny. Jay was funny. Now, you may get on me about this, but I don't think Jimmy Fallon is that funny. I mean, when I first started watching his show, he wasn't funny at all. Fallon even had Jay Leno on his show, and Jay said, "Fallon, you're not funny, man." I'm glad he agreed with me because I knew something was wrong. I said, "No, he's not getting it," because he would stand up there when the show comes on. He'd come out from behind the curtain, do his monologue as Jay used to do, but Fallon was not. He was not funny. And he may not still be funny. But what's exciting about Fallon, he plays games with celebrities. I guess that's what's getting his ratings, And Fallon is from, I believe he used to be a cast of Saturday Night Live. One thing about Saturday Night Live, I mean, they just, the comedians, they just, it's like a revolving door at Saturday Night Live. There's always somebody new on there. But that Kenan Thompson, he's still there for some reason. But anyway, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, and I apologize if you waited for my guest, Chris Jones. I had two phone calls on my board. I don't know if that was him or not. But anyway, sometimes people are nervous. They get shy. It's only a radio show. It's only a talk show, radio show. You call into the show. Some people are nervous to talk on the air. That could be it, because I did see two calls on my board here, and suddenly they disappeared. I'm thinking that, you know, he probably, you know, didn't like the format of the show or something, or just nervous and not decided not to do the show. That's fine. That's fine. There's no obligations to do the show. There's nothing. There's no contracts. There's nothing. You don't. You want to do it, you do it. You don't, you don't. All right. Okay. We are going to take a break here, folks. I've been talking my butt off. We're going to take a small break here. We got the clip.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio. You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Black Talk Radio.
All righty. That was great.
Called a fight against austerity, low wages, and something more. As picket lines, rallies, and marches unfolded across Chicago on Friday, April 1st, some 50 allied organizations
said
that their action, they say, is long overdue and part of a broader effort to demand economic equity in a city that has little.
Our schools are being underfunded because they refuse to tax the wealthy, the 1% who get everything. And children of color are the main ones who are affected. Look at this school in this community. The murder rates are at the highest in the city of Chicago and most impoverished colored communities. So I'm out here to make sure that if our children can't get the basic necessities, that they get the quality of education that they deserve.
Members of the Black Lives Matter movement in the Fight for 15 joined public school teachers, parents, and students as they took to the streets to demand change. The day began with nearly 30,000 strong Chicago teachers union walking off the job during a precarious moment for city schools. Officials say the system faces over a $1 billion budget deficit. Illinois Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, a fierce opponent of public unions, has rejected calls to bail out the city. Instead, he is pushing for bankruptcy and state takeover, a move the union opposes.
Well, there is money in the state. It's just flowing to the wealthy people, to the top 1%. What we need is actually progressive revenue. We need taxes on millionaires. We need a progressive income tax. We're only one of 9 states that has a flat tax. So the poor people are paying the same as the rich people, and that is not fair. We also need a tax on trades, on financial transactions, the LaSalle Street tax. If we had a 1 cent tax on every trade, that would bring millions of dollars to our schools.
Union leadership overwhelmingly approved the strike last week, but not all members agree. Two teachers penned an editorial in the Chicago Tribune saying the strike is a mistake and will hurt students. The union says strikebreakers could get kicked out of the union. The strike also comes amidst contract negotiations with the city, which, if unresolved, could result in another prolonged walkout in May. The city's embattled mayor, Rahm Emanuel, has criticized the strike, saying the union should focus its anger against the state.
We are striking here to protect our students. We keep having massive funding cuts. At my school, we had $180,000 cut just in the past 2 months. They've cut almost all our before and after school programs. They cut hundreds of millions of dollars around the city for special education services. A lot of these cuts are, frankly, are illegal.
The day of protest also focused on the school-to-prison pipeline, including a march from school picket lines to the Cook County Jail.
Well, they keep cutting services, not only in the schools, but in the whole neighborhood. They're closing down mental health facilities, libraries, a lot of clinics around the city. And what ends up happening, if these services are cut, then, you know, a lot of our students could end up going to jail. It promotes the school-to-prison pipeline. And right now, the jail right over here, a few blocks away, is the biggest mental health service provider, and that is horrifying.
But the main concern of protesters was unity and staying power. Unlike the historic 2012 teacher strike, which lasted 8 days, today's Chicago union movement is more broad-based, supporters say. And some fast food workers with the Fight for 15 are joining teachers in the picket lines.
She's also a man.
Support. A day of action they believe is becoming a movement that will not stop until their demands for economic justice are not just heard but seen.
Unions across the country that are collaborationists. They just collaborate with the boss. They settle bad contracts, and they aren't fighters. And a lot of unions have really gone away from striking. They don't threaten to strike, and striking, withholding our labor, is the biggest weapon we have.
The Chicago Teachers Union hopes their brand of militant unionism, inaugurated with the election of the Caucus of Rank-and-File Educators, or CORE, takes hold nationwide.
And if you look at the consequences of not fighting back, look at districts around the country. Look at Detroit, where they have about 60 students in a classroom. You know, look at L.A., where they didn't have raises for 6 to 7 years. Look at New Orleans with no public schools left, all charter schools. Those are the consequences of not fighting back.
For The Real News from Chicago, this is Jessel North.
All right, welcome back to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Sorry again, I apologize. My guest, Chris Jones, obviously was too shy to be on the radio. All righty, here we go. All right, Trump rallies against, let's see, protesters rally against Trump in New York. Oh, my goodness, that's an election. You got protesters rallying against Donald Trump in New York, a state he needs to win. Some people say he needs to win this state to actually be the nominee for the Republican Party. And the Republican Party, as you probably know, they're cringing at the sight of a President Donald Trump. The whole world is. This guy is totally unfit to be president. This guy is. And you got so many black people, especially ministers and pastors supporting this guy, supporting Donald Trump. And there's two young ladies that I think are just ridiculous. I'm not going to mention their names on this show because I don't want to give them any publicity whatsoever. But they're supporting Trump and, you know, and they're African-Americans. And you can, as long as you vote for folks, you can vote for whomever you want. Just vote for the right person. And I'm going to push for Bernie Sanders to win in New York next week. I'm going to next week from today. And today is the 14th of April. Next week will be the 19th of April. So if you're listening to the show archived, you'll know that the what dates there are. Okay. So that it's going to be interesting tonight, especially the Democratic debate. It's going to be interesting. I'm hearing fireworks are going to Bernie Sanders is going to have to do it twofold. But with his large crowds at his rallies, New York rallies, this may be one of the greatest upsets in American history. Because Bernie has done it before. He has been down 50 points, 40 points, and come back to beat Hillary Clinton. A lot of people do not trust Hillary Clinton. They do not believe her. They think she's a bully. They think she's, especially when she's taking money from Wall Street. And when you're taking money from Wall Street, you got to be saying something that they want to hear in order for them to give you that money. I would love to hear what she's saying in order for her to get that money. That's what we all want to know. What the hell are you saying? Oh, wow. But it's going to be great. It's going to be a great debate. I'm going to watch it. I'm going to have highlights of it on Monday so we can talk about it Monday. And I don't know if I'm going to watch the whole thing. Like I just got through saying, I may watch bits and pieces of it because I'm pretty sure that it'll be coming on as soon as I get off the radio here. And it's been fun, guys. It's been really fun. I'm here till 7:30, and I will be off. Once I get off today, I'm off until Monday because I got, you know, a million things to do, and I need the time off to do stuff. But I'm on 4 days a week, starting at 6 o'clock to 7:30, maybe 8 o'clock, 2 hours or something like that. If the show progresses, we'll go on to 3 hours. But we're on long enough, people. I'm telling you, sometimes it seems like forever. What are you going to say now, George? What are you going to say now? And it's fun. I love the show. I love doing the show. 347-857-1762. You can call in, chime in on anything that I've been talking about today, folks. And I'm sorry, Chris Jones did not show up. We got to forget about him. And we got to move on. And we got to move on. Next week, there should be, we have a full week of guests from Monday through Thursday, a full week. You know, so somebody will probably call off somewhere. But I'm pretty sure everybody will not call off because I want the best for this show. I want the best for this show. We're going to have politicians call into the show. And we're going to see how that works. You know, we're going to have a sportscaster. We're going to see how that works. We're going to have relationship experts call into the show, be a part of the show. We're going to see how that works. We're going to have other radio hosts, TV personalities, all of this kind of thing. So stay tuned and always tune into the show. You never know what's going to happen. You never know who's going to be here. You never know what I'm going to talk about. You never know what's going to be coming out of my mouth. So, all right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, broadcasting live out of Chicago. My studio, I'm near the lake, always near the lake, and it's always cooler near the lake. This daylight saving times, folks, I'm going to tell you once again, I've said this in many shows, previous shows, this daylight saving time is awesome because it's still daylight outside, you know. And that's probably what's resonating within me to be so giddy as I am. And I love it. And I get responses from listeners saying, George, you're so alive. You're so spirited when you're on your show. You're so spirited. I said, hey, that's the way I am in real life. If I'm not spirited, that means something is wrong. But basically, that's what it is, folks. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. Let's see if we can come up. Oh, yeah, we got, oh, man, I almost forgot this. We got a smart quiz question. And that question is, one branch of the government. Name one branch or a part of the government. And that's easy. If you can name one branch, it's probably the executive branch. There's another branch. I'm going to give you all three of them. The judicial branch and, you know, the legislative. Okay, if I'm wrong, you call me and let me know. I could be. You know, you never know. I don't know everything. I'm like Tom Hartman. I could be wrong, you know. So Tom Hartman, if you haven't heard of, if you don't know anything about him, he's one of my favorite. He's one of my mentors. He's one of my icons. And also Ed Schultz. He's one of my mentors. I mean, these guys, they're basically talk show hosts that has been doing it a lot longer than I have. And I look up to them. I listen to their shows. I don't know if they listen to me, but maybe they do. Sometimes I think they do because when I listen to some of their shows, I will find something from their show that they could have stolen from my show. You know, I mean, I'm going to say borrow because I may borrow material from their show. I may use something that they say on my show. But usually when I say something on my show, I'll try to be factual with it because I've been more likely researched it before I decide to talk about it. Okay. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, The Talk of Our Times.
You are now listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show, The Talk of Our Times. This is the talk of our times on Block Talk Radio, the Wilder Network.
New at 11, a Cumberland County man is facing new charges tonight after this video, and I want you to watch this with me. You see it right here, that man punching right there, punching a protester being led out at last night's Donald Trump rally in Fayetteville. But it's what happened next that made us go to the sheriff's office for answers.
26-year-old Rakeem Jones was punched in the face as he was escorted out of Donald Trump's rally last night. Speaking to CBS North Carolina, Jones describes what you see next.
You can see the deputies behind me and in front of me, and we're walking up, and they say, no, he came from nowhere. I look behind me, and then when I turn around, he elbowed me in my eye.
78-year-old John McGraw of Linden, North Carolina, was arrested today and charged with the assault. He spoke to Inside Edition as he was leaving the rally.
Yes, he deserved it. The next time we see him, we might have to kill him.
McGraw made it back to his seat after the incident and was met with smiles and clapping. But Jones, he got a different reaction after being hit in the face. First from the crowd.
They screamed the racial slurs as I was walking out, you know, go home.
And from deputies.
I was wrestled to the ground by Cumberland County Sheriff.
CBS North Carolina went to the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office for answers. After showing them the video, here's what they had to say about their deputy's actions. First, about why McGraw wasn't arrested for hitting Jones.
If we had stopped to investigate it at that time, we're afraid that we'd had a larger problem with more of the supporters coming over and we'd had a large fight.
And why a deputy immediately put Jones on the ground.
He thought that he had assaulted an officer.
Sure.
So we've got a miscommunication.
My gut reaction is like, wow, this really happened. Then the further add insult to injury, the police detained me like I did it.
A Trump representative said last night's incident was unfortunate but beyond their control. Jones was let go at the Crown Coliseum entrance. He doesn't face any charges for protesting. Meanwhile, the sheriff's office is collecting more videos for their investigation into the timeline of events. As part of that, hours ago, authorities added the charge of communicating threats to McGraw after they saw that Inside Edition video. Right now, McGraw's total secured bond is set at $5,000.
All right, you're back. You're back on the George Wilder Jr. Show from Block Talk Radio out of Chicago. Now, I played that clip to remind people that we do not want Donald Trump as a president. We do not want a President Trump. This guy is violent as they come. And he gets, as we all know, Donald Trump, when he loses, he is pissed off. He's coming after you if he loses. If he loses, you done cheated somewhere. You know, he doesn't like losing. He hates it. He's not a good loser. He's going to send his henchmen after you if he loses, you know. All right, Trump delegate woes. This guy is something else. We don't want it. He just may win tonight. I don't know. We're just going to have to find that out next week. You're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Blog Talk Radio. And it's going to be exciting. The Democratic debate is tonight. Clinton and Sanders face off in the most important debate yet. And I understand that this debate will be their last debate. This debate will tell it all. And Sanders need a win. He needs it now. He needs to come back like he did so many times to beat Hillary Clinton. But let me say this. If Hillary Clinton winds up winning New York, if she winds up winning, Bernie has no chance of getting the nomination. He might as well just, you know, quit and drop out. And if he does quit and drop out because he's lost New York and all the delegates, we have to hold our nose and put our support behind Hillary Clinton. You know, she has her flaws. She has a lot of them. And some people are saying that Hillary Clinton is going to be an Obama third term. Lord knows, I do not want an Obama third term, because Obama's first and second terms have been questionable. Don't want to. However, we need a Democrat in the White House. She would be better than Donald Trump. She would be a lot better than Donald Trump, I'm telling you. But less. Put our hands together and put our heads together and just, you know, pray. I'm going to say pray that Bernie Sanders upends Hillary in New York on April 19th. There's going to be a debate tonight. There's going to be a debate tonight, and there's going to be a lot of fireworks because Bernie knows that this is his last chance. This is his last chance. And I have a feeling this is going to happen, folks. I think Bernie Sanders is going to overtake Hillary Clinton in New York, her own home state, as she puts it, her adopted state. But she's leading, from my understanding, at this point, at this show, at this episode of the show, my understanding that Hillary is leading Bernie by 17 points in New York. Remember when Hillary was leading Bernie by 30 or 40 points and he came back to beat her? Something like that, folks, is always possible on the 19th of April. Now, if you're listening to this on the 19th of April or past the 19th of April, then you should know that there is somebody that's going to be president. It could be Hillary. It might be Bernie. But this debate should be very, very interesting. Very interesting. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show on Block Talk Radio. Here we go. Here we go. Let's see if we can't do something right here. Are dangerous. We all know that. That is no problem. We all know that. We will be right back, folks. Stay with me. Do we have that clip ready? Thank you. All right. I love that song. I love that song. I've been listening to that song since I was... a little kid. I mean, a teenager. I've been listening to that song a long time. Open our eyes. All right. Why New York's Democratic debate suddenly seems a lot more important? The moderators at Thursday's Democratic presidential debate shouldn't have a hard time thinking up questions. No, they shouldn't. It's been more than a month since Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders met on the stage. Since that time, the campaign has become more contentious, with nasty arguments over everything from whether Clinton is qualified to whether the Vermont tax gun laws cost
dark,
which is the site of the next primary. So they're going to be duking it out tonight. And like I said before, I'll be back here on Monday, folks, telling you all about it. I'm pretty sure you're going to know about it, but I'm just going to give you my commentary and my opinion and my thoughts on the entire thing. Don't get me wrong, folks. I am not a pundit, okay? I am a radio host, and I love being a radio host, and I'm going to continue to be a radio host as long as I'm above ground and have all my senses. All right, you're listening to the George Wilder Jr. Show. I think it's about 50 degrees in Chicago. It's 7:26. I got about 4 more minutes left into the show. A little over 2.5 minutes left into the show. So I'm looking at the wrong clock here. All right, I will be right back, folks. Actually, we're not going anywhere because we're just about off the air. So what I'm going to say is thanks for listening. Thanks for dropping by, and I apologize again for my guests not showing up. That happens. Follow me on Facebook. Follow me on Block Talk Radio. Follow me everywhere. I'm on Twitter. Make sure you check out my work on Amazon.com. Plenty of good stuff up there, folks. I mean, it is really good stuff up there. Check that stuff out. Check that stuff out and leave a review. And I'm going to say adios. I will be back on Monday. This is Thursday, okay? I will be back on Monday, 4 days a week, with some great guests, folks. Tune in for that. It should be a great time for conversation. And as I get off the show here, I got to produce more shows. So thanks for listening, and I'll see you guys next week. Let me see if we can't play our way out of this. Oh, wow. Someone just whispered in my ear, George, you have 90 seconds. I'm pretty sure it's going to be 60 seconds pretty soon. So, and the smart quiz question, in case you missed it, it was name one branch or part of the government. And I said it, the legislative. What can we say? The legislative branch. All right, folks, thanks for being with me. Thanks for your time. Thanks for everything. And I will see you next week. I will see you next week, starting at 6. Bye-bye.